Welcome to the HMO Experience, the UK's only HMO-focused property podcast, where every Monday, Matt, Jamie and Steve will inform and inspire you about everything to do with HMOs, rent to rent, and how to set up and grow a successful HMO business, whether you're just starting out or you're already on your way.
Hi guys, I'm Matt Harris and welcome to the HMO Experience. This is episode 8 of our brand new podcast. And in this episode, we're going to be covering off what you need to take into account when viewing properties for buying and to convert into HMOs. So let me introduce you to my co-host, Jamie.
Hi everyone, Jamie.
And Steve.
What's up?
What's up? Now, I personally don't have any experience of buying and converting a property into a HMO. That's very much part of the journey we go forward. So I think in this episode, I'm just going to ask a couple of questions and get some feedback from you guys so you can share your experience, because I know you've got quite an extensive portfolio that you've built up over the last few years. I think the first point then would be for me to ask what an ideal HMO or potential HMO property looks like.
Great. Okay, cool. So great question. We're often asked, what does an ideal property look like? And it really depends on what your strategy is.
Sure.
So if your strategy is to buy a property and maximize the income without spending much money on the refurbishment, you can do that with a smaller property. So many people call that minimos, i.e. small HMOs, houses of multiple occupancy. So to give you an example, some people will buy, let's just say, a small three-bed terraced house and convert one of the downstairs rooms into a fourth bedroom and rent it out. That means that the purchasing process is relatively quick because the refurb process is relatively quick. You know roughly what your costs are, and that's not necessarily going to add massive value to the property at the end of the works, but you're going to maximize your rental income.
Yeah.
So some people want to do that. And you can go with smaller properties if you follow that strategy.
Yeah.
If, on the other hand, you want to buy a property and convert to an HMO and maximize the value to refinance it once the works are done to pull as much money out as possible, and at the same time maximize your rental income, then again, you can look at a terrace house, but you will have to really rip out everything internally and structurally change that. And we'll go on to why maybe in another episode.
Yeah.
So in terms of what an ideal HMO looks like, the answer is it depends. It depends on what your strategy is out of those two main options. And of course, you can go for bigger buildings too, commercial conversions, buying pubs and converting those as well. But if we just look at the majority of housing stock and the experience that Steve and I have with our business partners of buying properties, we could buy a three-bedroom terraced house, semi-detached house, detached house, and convert that to a 5, 6, 7, 8 bed HMO. So that's typically what we're looking for.
Nice. And have you, as part of your buying strategy, have you only gone on to add value to properties, or have you tried the minimo approach as well?
No, we've never done minimos ourselves because our main strategy is to buy, add value, recycle as much cash as possible, maximize income, and then use that cash you've released from refinancing to go and keep buying. So we've never done the smaller minimo route. It's a great strategy for those who want to keep it nice and simple and quick and effective.
Yeah.
But in our experience and people we've trained, not many people have been able to raise the value enough to bring out much of those funds to go again.
Okay, fair enough. So say I'm on Rightmove, I'm looking, I found a three-bed terrace. I think, okay, this could potentially work. There's space to add some value by creating some additional space at the back of the house or going into the loft. Like what happens then? Obviously, we arrange a viewing. Like, talk me through the steps of what you do.
So we talked in the last episode about why it's important to really get to know and build rapport and trust with your agent, the letting agent in the last episode.
Sure.
Of course, this time I'm looking to buy, so it'll be with the estate agent. The same thing rings true. There are loads of people who want to buy properties these days. So you want to come across as being very professional, have credibility. So all those little things we talked about, such as building trust and rapport with them, again, is just as valid when buying versus looking to do a renter HMO. So that said, again, it comes down to the floor plan, the size of the property. So we think about whether your strategy is to do the minimo route or indeed the bigger conversion route.
Yeah.
You have to know what the current footprint of that property is.
Okay.
If you are looking to take on a three-bed house, for example, and then convert that to a 5 or 6 or bigger HMO, that it's really important to know what the total footprint is, because you will be using something like a magic plan or your laser measurer to understand what that is, so you can then build a floor plan that you can then rip that apart back at home or wherever you are analyzing the deal to see if you can work with an architect and a builder to make more rooms that fit the room size requirements in your area.
Okay.
If you are just doing a minimo, of course, it's a lot simpler. You still need to work out what the room sizes are to make sure they are compliant, but you're not going to be adding, you're not going to be ripping down walls. You're going to be working within the current structure. So that's the first key thing I would suggest people look at, which is create your floor plan first.
Okay.
What do you say, Steve? Any additional points there?
No, exactly that. It's before you can actually convert something, you need to know what the art of the possible is.
Mm.
So unless you are doing that preparation, and I always look at the floor plan that the agents provide.
Sure.
But what I've actually found is that the floor plan that the agents provide most of the time don't resemble what the actual property looks like. And so make sure that you do take your own floor plan and you work off of actuals as opposed to what the agents believe it is.
Sure.
And having been in agency, everyone's under time pressures. And if it's not quite 100% right, then it's good enough.
Sure.
But unfortunately for us, if we base our decisions on that, then we'll either waste our time going looking at a property that's not suitable, which may impact on the relationship with the agent. And how else could you use that time?
Yeah.
So if you're living in Cambridge, as I do, and trek up to Liverpool, and I base all of my decisions on the floor plan of the agents, then that could be a wasted trip.
Yeah.
So it's 3 hours there and 3 hours back, and probably an overnight as well.
Do you remember when you, I don't know if you were, when you were growing up as a kid, you had that little game called an Etch-a-Sketch. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So that's how I view estate agency floor plan. A load of rubbish. You can like twizzle a few knobs and you have an approximate square of a room. It's rubbish. I'd always do it. Do your own version.
And then just a tiny disclaimer at the bottom saying these room sizes aren't necessarily true to size.
But yeah, that's the essence of it. Is what if you're looking on Rightmove, get your Rightmove alert set up and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Have the information being delivered to you as opposed to you going out and looking for it. If the floor plan looks promising, then go on to the next stage.
Okay. And the next day, so you've gone, you've had a look. It kind of ticks a few of the initial boxes in terms of, you know, the floor space measurement and the room sizes. What happens then?
Well, then you've got to, again, depending on your strategy, you've got to price up what those works will cost you, because that comes into play in terms of how much money you want to make at the back end, how much income you're going to get. So you really need to make sure before committing to buy and putting an offer in, you know what those costs are going to be. And unless you are very experienced in this already, I would strongly recommend you get a builder to come with you on the second viewing to price up the works. So walk around with him or her, see what I did there? Walk around with him or her to tell them about what your plans are, what you'd like to do with the property. Show them the current floor plan of the property as it stands and also what you're looking to do potentially with that property, subject to you buying it. Then you'll be able to talk through any recommendations that the builder might have in situ, but also they might point out things that you weren't aware of. Right. There might be some things structurally, such as, I don't know, you might want to take out a fireplace. That might have further refurb implications and costs.
Mm.
So speak to your builder on that second viewing. Then when you go away and you get your quote through from the builder, then you can put those into your numbers. Because the great thing about looking to buy a property and convert an HMO is there's not quite so much time pressure in terms of other buyers in your area, because you're going to commit potentially a lot of money to this, whether it's your money or somebody else's. So you've got to be absolutely 99.9% firm on your costings. Otherwise, you could make a costly mistake.
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend get your refurb quote through, get that itemized from the builder, put that into your deal analysis, and we'll do another episode on deal analysis shortly on the HMO experience. And then once you've got those costs in, you then know what you can actually offer and start negotiating with the estate agent.
Okay, fair enough. And I guess In terms of like the, so you've gone through the two-step process with the viewings. In terms of the number of viewings that you, the number of properties that you viewed compared with the number of offers and completions that have gone through, what is generally a reasonable sort of ratio to work towards?
Okay.
For rent to rent, it's, you know, you're, it's pretty open because you're competing in a, I guess, a wider market where there's other, you know, rent to rent operators out there.
Sure.
So you have to do quite a high number of viewings in order to get something over the line.
Yeah.
Is that something similar for buying and developing, or is it a case of, you know what, you have three viewings and now the three, there's two of them always going to be suitable that you go ahead with?
Yeah, good question. I think anecdotally, we buy quite a lot of property, but we're buying it for ourselves and on behalf of investors too.
Yeah.
And those investors are coming to us because we've got a track record and experience in our area, which means that the number of properties we view and then put offers in pretty much is 100%.
Oh, wow.
But whether we get those or not is another matter. So out of, say, 10 properties, we'd probably get offers accepted on four of those.
Oh, wow.
Because the agent knows we're going to complete on those because we've got a track record.
Yeah.
So if you are just starting out, again, take your time. Don't use those ratios as gospel.
Sure.
Because you've got to know your area. You've got to know the property. You've got to know what the refurb costs are. So just go and view as many as you can, do your proper analysis, and then over time you'll get a much greater understanding as to how many you can see, then put offers in, and then work out your acceptance ratio, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair. Cool. Anything else to add, Steve, that we might have missed off?
No, as Jamie's mentioned on the second viewing with your builder, we would always advocate getting a number of quotes.
Sure.
Then just rely on one quote. So the best way that we found to do that is to create a schedule of works.
Okay.
So by creating a schedule of works, it means that you can give that schedule of works to other builders, and then you're getting a quote on a like-for-like basis. So the best way to get an accurate schedule of works is to pay your builder to create one for you. And therefore, he is going to put the appropriate time and effort in to do a proper job.
Sure.
Because the worst thing that could potentially happen is that once you've purchased it, you then find that some big expense comes out of the woodwork, or the roof work, or the chimney flue, or the whatever it is, subside, or whatever it might be. So by paying your builder to help you create that schedule of works, and we're always honest and upfront with our builders. We don't go for the cheapest quote and we don't go for the expensive quote. So we want to be sort of somewhere in the middle. But having your builder come on that viewing to help you create that schedule of works is absolutely vital.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do that, then you will get, or there's the opportunity for a large variation in the refurbishment cost, and then you're sort of back to square one. How many people out there have been in a situation where they've got one quote at 20,000 from a builder, another one at 40,000, another one at 60,000?
Yeah.
How do you make a decision based on that wide variation of refurbishment costs? So that is a real important step, hence the reason why you need to get your builder in on that second viewing.
Yeah.
And then once you've got your redrawn space as to how that's going to be, which will need to be checked and approved by an architect, it's always, to my mind, starting with the end in mind.
Sure.
So understanding what your level of finish is going to be. Are you going to be putting in bespoke fitted furniture, or are you going to go down the sort of modular furniture route?
Mm.
What colour scheme are you going to put in? What standard of kitchen are you going to put in?
Yeah.
If you're putting in en suites everywhere, are they going to be electric showers or are they going to be non-electric showers? So having that understanding of what the end looks in mind will help you shape that schedule of works, which will help you get the appropriate refurbishment cost, which will help to put into your numbers, which means you'll end up being accurate on your costings.
Yeah. I think that's a nice little segue, really, to take us on to the next episode, where we go and have more of a chat around putting forward an offer and negotiating an offer, and both for buying. Obviously, we've very much, you know, covered buying a property to convert into an HMO in this episode, and then we can also cover a separate episode from a rent to rent perspective as well, in terms of putting it across an offer and negotiating that. So I think. We'll leave it there. If we're happy, gents, for this episode of the HMO Experience. So just want to say thank you very much again for tuning in and listening to us sort of talk about what you need to take into account when you look to carry out viewings for buying properties to convert into HMOs. Always going to say, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, The HMO Experience. Go and have a look. You can see the three of us laughing and smiling and dancing sometimes.
Dance?
Yeah, no, we'll get there. I think someone mentioned Strictly.
Oh, okay. All right, not going to volunteer for that.
Yeah. And also, if you want to continue the conversation, make sure you find us on Facebook at The HMO Experience. Look out for hashtag HMO Hacks as well. I know there's a few bits in here that are going to be covered as part of Hacks, because we can have a little bit more of a deep dive about specific points that we've covered here. Yeah. So all of our social links are going to be included in the show notes. So, you know, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as well. Next Monday, we are going to cover off putting forward an offer and negotiating an offer. I guess we'll continue from a buying perspective. So until then, thank you once again. It is going to be goodbye from me. I'm going to go the other way around now.
Very confused.
Yeah,
we're simple.
I'm confusing myself. And I'll let Jamie say goodbye.
And goodbye from me. And Steve.
And goodbye from him.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. We'll see you in the next episode.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the HMO Experience. Don't forget that all of the resources mentioned in each episode will be available on our website, www.thehmoexperience.co.uk. We regularly update our website with new content to help you along your HMO journey. So make sure you check out www.thehmoexperience.co.uk for more details. Also, remember to join our online community by liking the HMO Experience Facebook page and subscribing to our YouTube channel.